Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare! All the naughty bits exposed. Our goal is to open your eyes to all the inside info that makes reading Shakespeare way more fun. Any episode might contain dick jokes.
Or essay ideas.
Or anything in between. So listen up. Hey.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, a brand new play. It's exciting. A nice, shiny, new 450-year-old play.
But before we go there, let's just, since last week I said I would do a little poking around about what other people had to say about Measure for Measure.
Yes.
And I did find Marjorie Garber talking about it, but I didn't get to watch the whole thing because my life got in the way.
That's okay.
But she says she feels it's a remarkable play.
I agree.
She says it's a puzzle in every possible way, and that there are so many different interpretations, all of which are true.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm going to do a little more research, and if I find anything interesting, I'll put it in the show notes, but that's it.
Yeah, and in my class, we just finished talking about it, and they were really interested and focused on Isabella's silence at the end of the play in response to the Duke saying, gee, I want to marry you. Mm-hmm. And I noticed when I was reading back that Claudio, in the first scene when he talks about her, he says she has a prone and speechless dialect. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a little bracket, like she was described as speechless, like her best communication is speechless. And there she is at the end, speechless. But also they said, yeah. And they also, the students and teachers also said an interesting thing about how maybe it's Shakespeare saying, in order for, you know, because at the end of comedies, he has weddings, wherein in many of them, the women are silent. Like, we don't hear from Celia at all in As You Like It. You know, lots of times the women are just participating as silent partners. And that is the universe restored to its best form, is when women are quiet.
Aristotle would say that was true.
Yes, he would. So maybe he was making an extreme of that case, you know? Really interesting. And also interesting how an actor or director handles the Isabel, give me your hand and say you will be mine. Whether if she gives him her hand, that is technically a hand fasting because it's in the presence of witnesses. And if she doesn't, then it isn't. Then there's, you know, some room for equivocation.
Yeah. Interesting.
So some interesting moments there at the end. We also noted that Mariana was like silent when they tell her what the plan is, right? So these silent women, incredible eloquence in their silence. Well, it gives you the opportunity as an actor for eloquence in your silence.
Interesting.
Yeah. So here we come with a very different about face. Yeah.
We have deformity of the morals, and now we have deformity of the physical.
Of the body, yes. And we had a very late play, and now we have a quite early play. Richard III was written in 1592, very early. Measure for Measure was 1604.
But this doesn't feel like an early play. When you compare it to the other earlies, it feels much more complex than the other earlies.
Yeah, for sure. Much more complex than, like, even Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does a lot with, you know, his developing talents here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you know nothing about Richard III, you probably have heard that he was some kind of horrifying hunchback.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Erin.
What plays bracketed Richard III? What came right before and what came right after?
So Henry VI cycle came before So Henry VI.
But did it come directly before?
Pretty much. Henry VI Part 2 and 3 were written right before this one.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Because they're not, I mean, he starts to get in 2 and 3, we start to get a sense of Richard, the character. But they are definitely not as complex in terms of their writing as this play is. And then what comes right after this?
Comedy of Errors comes right after this one. And that's interesting. Wow. Also an early play, but, you know, not, it seems not as like rich and dense as this one.
Not even close.
Not even close.
It's like this one is a, some kind of anomaly in some way. Like something happened for a brief period of time and then it went back and then it came back.
Yeah. Well, maybe he needed to sort of shake it off. You know, like, ooh, that history cycle, so intense, right? So he just like, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I've got twins at home. Maybe I'll write a twin play.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I mean, I feel like 2 and 3 are not, in the Henriad, are not, I mean, there are some moments, like in 3, She Wolf of France, all of that interaction between Margaret.
And York.
And
then also Henry, when he's sitting right and watching the battle, that beautiful speech about time and the shepherd, that's a beautiful speech. There's some very moving, lovely parts. And then Richard, when he's sitting that last bit in the chair and he tells
it's
you.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's good.
So very much equal to this first speech that we're going to hear. Also.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. Sorry, we're talking about a play we haven't done yet and you're not likely to read. But anyway, I just needed to know what came before and after to sort of place this in Shakespeare's head.
Yeah. We will get to that Henry VI cycle one day because it's very fun. And, you know, there's some crazy characters. And it's so, so Game of Thrones. It really is.
Yeah, it is. I just I was just lucky enough to participate in Pendant Audio's Henry VI Part 1, which is a podcast.
Oh,
they
right,
do Shakespeare plays in their entirety as a podcast. I had a blast. I got to play 3 different roles. It was super fun. And if you're interested in hearing the whole thing read scene by scene with different actors than Diana and me, you can go check that out.
Yeah. Sounds fun. Good shout out. Okay, so we said it's very Game of Thrones, and that's because it is the whole story of the Wars of the Roses, which were some civil wars in England back in the 1400s. And they involved 2 families, and maybe this first one sounds familiar. Lancaster? Lannister? Hey! Yorks? Starks? Yeah. So it was a battle between the Lancasters and the Yorks, and that's because they were both lines that descended from the same king, Edward III. And so Edward III had all of these sons, and when it came to inheritance, it got a little complicated.
Yeah.
They were just like battles back and forth, the crown going back and forth. But finally, just before this play, so I'm going to streamline it, right? Just before this play, the 3 brothers of York beat Margaret of Anjou in a battle at Tewkesbury. And Margaret of Anjou was Henry VI's queen. And they kicked her ass. Sadly, she was kind of cool. Very fierce warrior queen. And they killed her son right in front of her face. So that was pretty horrific. And basically, she's angry, but beaten for now. She was let loose, and we're going to meet her in scene 4 of this play. Then Richard goes to the tower, and he kills King Henry, where he's being held prisoner. And that pretty much finishes off the Lancasters. Or maybe
does
no.
It? Maybe
no.
Does it?
Oh, no, darling, I didn't no. Because, of course, the Lancasters are not going to die that easy, right? So they're kind of casting him out for another heir. And this crazy woman, Margaret Beaufort, whose son is like the nephew of the snoogity-snoogity-snoo, she decides that her son is the Lancastrian heir. And she gets
God chosen.
Oh, yes. And she's praying and praying and going to church and then meanwhile killing small children. But
she was nuts.
Nuts. Completely.
What show? Yeah. What show were we watching? Was it The White Queen?
The White Queen. Yeah, it really gives you a great idea of how this all happened, and it's only 10 episodes. Nice, short, doable, bingeable, easy. So, if you want to see what the Wars of the Roses is all about, White Queen, go watch it. Pretty cool. So, the York brothers come out on top. Richard is the third son. There was a fourth son, and he was also killed on the battlefield by Margaret and her cronies. So they've got a bit of a beef, these York sons. Yeah.
I mean, there was a beef. There was a beef anyway because of the crown going back and forth and the Lancasters not being in as direct a line as the Yorks.
Right. Yeah.
But because a York did something that got his, I'm trying to remember now all the way back to Henry 6-1, a York did something for which he was imprisoned, Mortimer. And so he lost, he and his brother also, right? One lost their life and one lost their title and was imprisoned for life.
Yeah. And Richard, Duke of York, swears to avenge him and this and that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this has gone back a couple of generations. We're not talking this is new.
No. It's been going on. I think it goes on for like 40 something years. Not like the Hundred Years' War. That was a little different. Constantly fighting with each other. But yeah, it went on a long time. And probably the people of England by this point are like, what the fuck is going on and who is king? I don't know.
And I don't care. I just want to have my crops work and not to pay so much of my crops to that asshole lord.
Yeah, and I'm sick of fucking soldiers trampling all my shit.
Ooh.
Yes. Aaron.
Soapbox.
Soapbox.
Seriously. Think about it. What is happening in politics right now, whether in the United States, in Israel and Gaza, like the people, the innocent people who are being killed, hurt, raped, wounded, having their homes taken away from them in Israel and in Gaza, their innocence, and they just want to live their lives. Yeah. They just want these people who are using them as pawns to knock it the fuck off.
Yeah, you know, and who are also just trampling over them, like not unconcerned, maybe not
unconcerned.
Even using, like just like they are nothing and we don't have to be worried about what we do to them. Terrible.
Right.
Just terrible.
Right. And so this is actually very timely in that sense.
Yeah.
Because a king is supposed to be there for his people, not to be in power. Just like a prime minister is meant to be there for his people or her people and not just for power.
Right. Remember how you got there, motherfuckers.
Exactly.
Right. At least if you're in a democratic sort of a state.
Yeah, but even if you're a king, I am England, meaning I am all of you. I represent all of you. I don't represent myself and my interests or myself and the interests of my court. I represent the interests of all of you. That's how it's supposed to be.
Yes, absolutely. Right.
So just, I'm done.
So be more of a Henry V. Yeah, than these jerks.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the Yorks. The Yorks are the Yorks are now in power, and the eldest brother Edward is king, and he has two sons and many other children. So it seems like okay, everybody's good. We've got a king and we've got heirs, so we can just breathe. And that's the time when Richard goes, this is perfect fodder. This is a good field for me to bustle around in. because he's like, this fucking sucks. I have done all this stuff for these guys. I have fought all these battles for these guys. And what do they do to me? They just
shuffle me off.
Shuffle me off. Don't care what I care about anything anymore. And they're all sitting happy and pretty with their little heirs and their stuff and fucking their mistresses. And yes. Heirs.
Also, if you are a regular listener of this podcast, to this podcast, listener of, listener to, whatever, you will remember that we talked about in King Lear how when a parent disses you, that it causes an incredible amount of pain and shame. And that pain and shame can drive you to do some horrible things. So in addition to the fact that Edward and Clarence maybe too, don't give Richard the time of day, his mother is horrible to him.
Yeah.
Awful to him.
Awful. Yeah. And his father was not. So Richard was the chief mourner at his father's funeral. He loved his father. He would do anything for his father. But he was the, you know, youngest son. So he, by right of English law, this is what he gets, which is big zip. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. But they could have been nicer to him.
Yeah. For sure.
I mean, that probably would have gone a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because he showed his loyalty again and again and again.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You will find out, guys, that I'm a huge Richard fan, on the border of becoming like an obsessive. But
so. My family are Yorks.
Yay, Yorks.
Yeah.
Woohoo. Clarence, or George, Duke of Clarence, is the second son, and you don't have to worry about him too much because he's only going to be around for Act One.
But he does get to go in a very interesting way.
Oh, yes. But, you know, he's step one on Richard's ladder of, like, got to get that guy out of the way. So basically, Richard is on a quest to get himself closer to being the heir to the throne. His eldest brother, Edward, right now has been whooping it up, living it up, and basically he ends up dying of gout. So he has consumed too much alcohol, too much food, too many women, and he is just, you know, doing himself in. So Richard doesn't have to worry about him. So what do we know about Richard?
Well, we know that when they dug up the parking lot and discovered his bones, how awful that he was under a parking lot. I just,
well,
you know,
it was
the ultimate
in a field at some point.
I know, but like, don't you think? I don't know. Let's not pave over that part because maybe that is where Richard III is buried. I don't know. It just seems, even if he was a villain, which we think he was actually not.
Yeah.
That, you know, burying him and then paving it over seems really, really out of line.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we've always been told that he was deformed. And when they dug up his bones, they did determine that he, in fact, had scoliosis.
Yeah. So, you know, and the wonderful thing about that is that Shakespeare also leaves it very open-ended, you know? Like, he doesn't specifically say certain things until we get later into the play. So it's really up to the actor and the director to decide how much they want him to be deformed or in what manner. Yeah. I've seen everything from people with multiple crutches and, like, you know, twisted backs and stuff to people who are, you know, walking pretty upright and doing okay, except for a little bit of a, you know, strange, you know, get up in their gait, perhaps. So I think you got a whole gamut there. If you watch the Hollow Crown series, which is Cumberbatch doing Richard, you will see, and I think I talked about it before, he's like monstrously deformed, horrifying. So, you know, that's one take, but it doesn't have to be all of them.
Right? In The White Queen.
He was not.
Richard
was not
deformed at all.
Not at all. Nope. because by his contemporaries, he was described as a powerful warrior, right?
Also handsome.
Handsome, yep. So Sir Thomas More was writing the history of the Tudor family at the time, and he's not a contemporary, but he was writing for Henry VIII. He was writing all of the history of the wars and stuff, and he was generally favorable, you know, in terms of some things, but he also said that distortion of character follows a distorted countenance. So he was saying that because Richard was distorted in some way physically, that that explains why he was such an awful person. But it remains to be seen whether he was totally an awful person.
Right. Well, we don't know.
Right.
We only know what we know, and that's heavily colored by this play, which is propaganda. Funny out of side.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have to remember that Shakespeare, we always have to remember context, right? That Shakespeare is writing for Queen Elizabeth's court, hoping to get his play, especially early on. He's hoping to get his plays performed at court, hoping the queen herself comes to see his show. So what would a young playwright who's trying to make some money start off with? Well, the history of how Elizabeth got here. Hey,
yeah.
What a great idea. Yeah. Yeah. So here he's writing for this queen, and you'll see that at the end of Richard III, we meet her grandparents, and right. They are legitimized by this play.
Yeah.
You know, in this big, huge way. Yeah. So we'll reserve judgment until we get to some of the words that describe him. And it's interesting because he himself... There's a huge difference between how he describes himself and how other people describe him, right?
Absolutely.
Other people tend to curse him and call him out, which is really awful. But he himself uses indistinct words like deformed, unfinished, sent before my time. You know, so these are like tending to blame society or blame his parents for the way that he came out. And not necessarily nature. Well, I mean, yes, nature, but like, you know, not distinctly talking about exactly how his body is formed. Unfinished, an interesting word, because it was thought that a baby came out deformed if there was not enough generative matter, not enough sperm or not enough egg from one or the other parents, right? Or even like if the mother laid on the wrong side of her body, if she was laying on her left when she got fucked, it was going to produce a monstrous baby as opposed to if she was laying on her right. They thought the womb had three different sections and that, you know, this side made males and this side made females. I mean, like, it was crazy shit that they thought about pregnancy back then. Yeah. Or mothers were really also terribly protected when they were pregnant, if they were nobility and wealthy enough to have the privilege of laying in, right? Mm-hmm. They got to have this long, long time where they were just very carefully treated, trying not to upset them or give them any anxiety of any kind, because it was thought that any kind of a fright or anxiety could deform the child in the womb.
But also, sent before my time makes me wonder if he wasn't premature.
He was premature, yes.
There you go.
Yeah. And in fact, he was born with teeth. You'll hear them talk about that, which is also very bizarre. You know, like the midwives were like, oh my God, what is that?
But do we know that for a fact he was born with teeth?
Yes, I think. Yep. Well, Sir Thomas More puts that in. But that's kind of a fact. And so it's not an opinion. So you'd think like, well, maybe he put that in. That's true.
Keep talking. I'm going to go looking.
Okay. But so ultimately, monstrous births were the fault of the mother.
Well,
so as Aaron said, yeah. But as Aaron said, Richard's mother is horrible to him. And I think that what she's doing is shifting blame all the time, because otherwise people would be pointing at her and saying, you're the problem. You're the one who brought this creature into the world. And
yeah.
They do ultimately, eventually, Margaret, Queen Margaret points at her and says that.
Okay, so this is interesting. As Margaret warns, when he bites, his venom tooth will rankle to the death. The story that Richard was born with teeth is one of many contradictory versions of his accelerated childhood growth and unnaturally prolonged gestation.
Ah, so he was not sent before my time.
Yeah. Interesting.
Okay, so again, like, you know, different accounts from different people, even from Richard himself. But I'm sure as he was growing up, he was told all kinds of stories about himself.
Mm-hmm.
And those stories, as Aaron said, feed and shape who the person is going to become, just like Regan we were talking about.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. But I think Richard uses his deformities somewhat as an advantage, right? He tends to walk into a room and call himself out before other people can. It's almost like a defensive measure. And so that it almost makes him seem like the honest man in the room because he's like laying his cards on the table. This is who I am.
Yeah. So, I mean, how many of us do that? When someone goes to take my picture, I automatically make a face. That way, I can't look bad in the photograph because I'm making a face, which is funny.
Yeah.
We so all do that defensive. To protect ourselves.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he has to protect himself because absolutely everywhere he goes, people say awful things to his face. Many people in his world call him by animal names. You'll hear like hedgehog, toad, serpent. And so if you were an animal in the Elizabethan times, you were demoted to the bottom of the food chain, right? That's why there's these animal imageries to describe characters that are awful because so, we don't have to worry about them. They're not humans. They're animals.
Well, and we do, mini soapbox, we do that now, do we not?
Yes.
Right? We dehumanize other human beings so that it's okay to kill them or it's okay to torture them or it's okay, whatever. Anyway, I'm done with that. I mean, I'm angry, you can tell. But like Marjorie Garber says that Richard tries to be his own parent and his own author. He appropriates stories in an effort to reproduce himself as a man-child born to be king.
Nice. Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I also read in a different somewhere, I'm not quoting it properly, but that his deformity serves him until he becomes king. And then it's a liability and he can't use it in the way that he has before.
That he's been used to.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's interesting also that he's a valiant warrior, an incredible soldier who's fought in many, many battles and been triumphant, but his ultimate undoing is on the battlefield. Very interesting.
Yeah, bummer.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler. Well, it's a tragedy. It's the tragedy of Richard III. Therefore, you know that he dies.
Yes.
Like the tragedy of Othello. Yeah. All right. So as to other characters, this is unusual, this play, because there are four women in this play. That's a lot.
Yeah. And it's not small roles either.
No. There's, in fact, we get to Act Four and we have something that is famously called the Wailing Women scene, where all four women, all four women appear in the same scene. That's incredible. It's like, when does that happen? You know? Yeah. So there are two older women. There's Queen Margaret, who we just said, who's represented as a mad hag. And then there's the Duchess of York, Richard's mother, who says time and again that she is 80 years old. And why does she say that? So because it's so unusual.
So old.
So old. Good grief. Shakespeare died when he was 52 and he was considered to be an old man. Yeah. And then we have two younger women.
Wait. Before you go on, how old was Margaret? How old was Queen Margaret at the time when the Duchess is 80?
I'm thinking maybe 60 or something.
Yeah, that's
I'll
what
have to look that up. But yeah, I don't think not as old. Definitely not as old.
Right.
Yeah. Margaret only had one son. Duchess of York had four, you know, so yeah. She's been, Duchess of York has been around for most of the battles and long before that. Yeah. Then we have two younger women. We have Queen Elizabeth, who's Richard's sister-in-law, married to King Edward, and she's queen right now. But we'll talk about her a little bit more too, because she was a widow when Edward married her, and nobody wanted him to marry her because they wanted him to take a fresh young queen who hadn't been around the block and didn't have other kids, you know, and he was just besotted with Elizabeth. So he married her and then proceeded to pump out lots of babies.
Yeah. I was going to say, she was a fertile fanny.
Oh, yeah. Woo. She just kept having kids and was happy to do so. And she also, as soon as she got to court, she installed all of her brothers, cousins, whatever, into positions at court. Just super strategic in this incredible way, where she just put in all her tentacles and nobody's going to fucking move me. And me and my family are taking over this place. So you'll hear them talk about that, like, wow, this is shitty. Yeah. And then we have Lady Anne, who is daughter to the Earl of Warwick, who died in Henry II, I think.
He was the kingmaker. Yes.
They called him the kingmaker because he kept supporting the one who won. You know, so he supported Edward also, and he supported, but he supported Henry VI when he was, you know, up on the rise. So they called him the kingmaker. I think it was, you know, he was just getting on the right side just in time.
Yeah.
So her father is dead. Her husband is dead because he was the boy that was the prince that was killed on the battlefield. So Lady Anne is a bit of a sad character. But we're going to see an incredible scene with her and Richard. Yeah.
Which we have a lot of questions about.
A lot of questions.
We continue to have many, many questions about.
That's okay. That's what makes the plays fresh, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And all of this killing off of rivals and things was actually condoned and, you know, and made popular by this book called The Prince by Mr. Niccolo Machiavelli.
Yeah.
And probably you guys have it on your reading list for, you know, high school reading and college reading because it was a very, very influential, tiny, slim volume of a book.
Continues to be to this day.
Yeah. Yeah. It was advocating, you know, different ways to take over power and how, and especially that when you get in there and have power, you have to get rid of all of your rivals and all of your, you know, people who wish you ill.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that it was better to be feared than it was to be loved as a leader.
Yes. Yes. Yep. And even Queen Elizabeth hearkened to that, you know, theory too, because she got rid of a lot of people when she first got into power. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She had to, especially as a woman, you know, trying to establish her footing. Yeah. So Richard subscribes to this, you know, method, and he is going to go about systematically killing off anyone who stands between him and the crown. That is his plan. And the beautiful thing is that Shakespeare lets us hear his plan. He is alone on stage when we first open the play, and he tells us everything he's going to do.
Yep.
It's great.
And we're right there with him. We're like charmed by him.
Oh, totally. He has so much charisma. Yeah. And he comes off as so smart, very funny, you know, and we just play along. It's wonderful. And when you
and self-deprecating.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the things we love.
Yeah. Where we're like, yeah, man, I can dig you. I'm going with you. Yeah, absolutely. So we start off really well with him, and then it gets ugly later, you know. But he's got four big soliloquies right up front in Act One, where he gets lots of chances to just talk to the audience, which is great.
Yeah.
And then I can't start the play without telling you about the Ricardians because, yeah. So they are a group of people who are dedicated to restoring the good name of this maligned king. He only ruled for 2 years, but he, you know, they say he began so well. And damn, he would have been such a good king. And we think he was just, you know, slandered by all these people. And fuck Shakespeare. They hate They hate this play. Oh my God, they hate this play.
When you were visiting York, didn't you run into a bunch of people who were like,
"Rrr!" Oh, yes. And in you go up to York now, even now, and they fly the white rose flag everywhere, everywhere. They are still Yorkists, and they still mourn the last Plantagenet king. Richard was the last Plantagenet king. And if you go to Bosworth Field, they still mourn the last Plantagenet king, where he was killed. It's incredible. Incredible. And I actually went into the gift shop at Richard III's castle, and I was poking around. And then I go to ask the woman behind the desk, I'm like, "How come you don't have any copies of Richard III? And my son is behind the register like, "No, no, 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 do not ask her that." And she looked at me with this withering stare, and she was like, "We don't." You know, she was just like, it was all she could do to be slightly polite. You know? Yeah, it was bad. And I was like, "Oh, right. Yeah,
right.
That's not. So a couple of script notes. Richard, you'll see in your script, is noted as Gloucester in the beginning because he's Richard Duke of Gloucester. That was a title that was given to the second brother of the king. All right. So that title would pass along to someone else, you know, if someone else becomes king. So that's what's confusing in the Henry VI thing is we see Gloucester all the time and it means different people.
Different guys.
And then in the second half of the play, when he's crowned, he becomes King Richard in the script. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have this magnificent first speech. Hopefully the first line is very famous and known to you. A couple of things you should definitely like pay attention to and listen for. There's so much alliteration in this first speech. This is one of Shakespeare's biggest tools in his toolbox, and he uses it to great effect. The sound ow, 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 like our and now is repeated again and again and again in the beginning. And then you'll see a distinct shift to the long sound I. And there's so much I when he starts to talk about me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the speech begins with a trochee. And if you don't know what that is a reversed syllable. So iambic pentameter goes ba-bum, 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 right? It's unstressed, stressed, da-da, da-da. But a trochee is the reverse. So it goes da-da, all right? So you wouldn't say, "Now is the winter of," right? You'd say, "Now is the winter," yeah? And what that serves to do is both to make you like sit up and pay attention and also to leave you a little bit uncomfortable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you really want to watch the line endings too. Like, what is the effect of those big words at the end of the line? Does that give you any information about this character? And then we'll see how we feel about Richard at the end of this speech. If we feel sorry for him or if we're psyched by him or if we are afraid of him. Yeah. This is our first introduction. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Enter Gloucester, Solus. "Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this sun of York. And all the clouds that lowered upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried." All right? So we have winter of our discontent is the Wars of the Roses, right? Mm-hmm. Now that thing is over, and now we have summer. So we have this great antithesis, winter and summer. And then we have the sun, S-U-N, is shining down on York, but we also hear S-O-N, because Edward is the son of York, and he is going to take us to glorious new places, right?
Or that's the assumption.
Yes, that's what y'all are thinking.
That's what y'all are thinking, right?
Yeah. Because if you've watched the Henry VI series, y'all are like, okay, great. The Yorks are in power. It's all looking good. So yeah. He's going with the party line in this first four lines. All the clouds that lowered upon our house. Notice the hour, right? Because it's all the Yorks. It's also the royal pronoun. But it's also me and you, the audience. So he's assuming a complicity there.
Yeah, you're with us.
You're with us.
But also, I think he's a, I mean, I always saw this first four lines as a just a little sarcastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Like, isn't it?
Oh, we're all so
just
happy.
Yeah, it's all so great, isn't it?
Yeah.
La di da di da. Yeah. And the wonderful thing is, if you know, deep bosom of the ocean buried, you have an end stop there. Could he have stopped there? Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Could have been a four-line speech and everything's fine. And on we go, right, with the play. But he has a lot more to say. Mm-hmm. Okay, and he starts with another now. Now are our brows bound with victorious wreaths, our bruised arms hung up for monuments, our stern alarums changed to merry meetings, our dreadful marches to delightful measures. So now he's talking about change. Now what happens in peacetime? Yeah. So we've had all these wars.
Victorious. We're celebrating.
We're celebrating. Our arms, meaning our weapons, are hung up on the walls to, you know, look at that. Oh, my God. Look at that dent you took in your shield. It's incredible. Our stern alarms, right? Our calls to battles are turned to merry meetings. Merry is slang for lusty. So merry meetings are fucking, right? Instead of going out to battle, we're fucking.
Yeah.
Our dreadful marches to delightful measures. So we have dreadful, delightful, weighing off against each other. Beautiful, because they both sound very similar. Measures are dances. So instead of marching, we're dancing.
Yep.
Yeah. And so as Aaron said, he's a little like, isn't that just cute? Right? Because as we said, he's a warrior, right? So what does a warrior do in peacetime?
Well, tries to fuck, I guess.
Yeah. But if he's a deformed fellow that nobody likes, is he fucking?
Well, he might be because he's in a position of power, but he's not getting any love out of the fucking. It's just fucking.
Yeah. He's getting whores and things, but he ain't getting he ain't getting noble ladies who want to marry him. Right?
Yeah, sort of like Tyrion.
Yeah. Yeah. Grim-visaged war hath smoothed his wrinkled front. And now, instead of mounting barbed steeds to fright the souls of fearful adversaries, he capers nimbly in a lady's chamber to the lascivious pleasing of a lute.
Yeah, so this is where he's really getting sarcastic.
Yeah. Really.
I feel like, you know, and now instead of mounting barbed steeds to fright the souls of fearful adversaries, that's what he wants to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So fright is to scare the enemies who scare us. Fearful, they are so scary, and we have to scare them back with these incredibly armed horses with spiky things on them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I like how he anthropomorphizes war, grim-visaged war. War has a face that's all wrinkled and angry and dour, and then he's smoothed over now. And he capers nimbly, so it could be war that capers, that's a dances. But it's also doing sexual acts. It could be war that's doing that, or he could be his brother, Edward, right? He's like, this guy, he used to be a warrior. Now look at him. He's just getting laid right, left, and center with the little music playing in the background. Now,
yeah, but lascivious pleasing. I mean, lascivious is an interesting choice of word there because that's very sexual.
Yeah. So the lute is encouraging them to fuck. Yeah. And listen to all those L's, right? He's really sticking his tongue out. Yeah. Ladies, nimbly, lascivious, lute. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the shift. And it starts with the word but, which is great. But is a direction changer always when you're studying a speech. But I, that am not shaped for sportive tricks, nor made to court an amorous looking glass, I, that am rudely stamped and want love's majesty to strut before a wanton ambling nymph, I, that am curtailed of this fair proportion, cheated of feature by dissembling nature, deformed, unfinished, sent before my time into this breathing world scarce half made up, and that so lamely and unfashionable that dogs bark at me as I halt by them. Whoa. Yeah. So I'm not shaped for sportive tricks. Sportive tricks is fucking, right? I am not the kind of shape that ladies who want to fuck come and find. So he's going to start examining his problems here. I came out of the womb this way. So shaped indicates that like somebody else shaped me. It wasn't my fault. I don't look in the mirror and think, you know, get a load of this sexy fuck, right? Mirrors are a recurring theme. He's going to talk about mirrors a bunch. I'm rudely stamped. Stamped means fashioned, but it's also a reference to coining. Their family is noble and rich, so making coins, you know, making sons is almost like making coins. You need lots of sons to have a rich family go on to be powerful, yeah? I want love's majesty. I lack what other guys have in terms of this beauty that gets them laid. To strut before a wanton ambling nymph, a slutty, and ambling was associated with whores. Hamlet says, you jig, you amble, you nickname God's creatures. So that's how he's describing whore. Yeah. And those poor nymphs were always raped by the gods. So, yeah. I am curtailed of this fair proportion. So a cur was a dog. And so he's giving us the image of the dog whose little tail is cut short. Yeah. And then we have the word fair proportion. So fair versus dark is going to be a recurring theme, right? I'm not pretty. And other people are pretty. And Richmond is going to bring this in at the very end. In his very last speech in the play, he's going to talk about a wish for fair issue, which is, you know, beautiful children, as opposed to this guy that he just killed. Spoiler, sorry.
Yeah, but it's also, well, we'll get there when we get there. I was going to say it's also fair as in correct.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He's saying that now things have been restored to the way they should have been to begin with.
Right. Yeah.
Back but to Lancasters.
You know, monsters versus fair babies. That's a big thing. Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Great. So I'm curtailed of this fair, cheated of feature by dissembling nature, deceiving. Okay. Nature did me a trick. Deformed, unfinished. He was said to have one shorter arm. And then we have the repetition of the I sounds in my time.
Mm-hmm.
Into this breathing world here's half made up. So he's incomplete. Lame. He doesn't walk well. Unfashionable. He's badly constructed. There's also nobody else like me. So that's I'm not of fashion because I am not like anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And the animal reference with the dogs, as I halt by them, halt means to limp. So he's describing some of it, but not really distinct. Yeah. Why I, in this weak piping time of peace, have no delight to pass away the time unless to spy my shadow in the sun and descant on mine own deformity. Yeah, so this weak piping time of peace, you can hear his disdain for peacetime. He is not a creature of peacetime. There's nothing for him to do here. And a weak piping time is like in contrast to the loud drums of war. Descant.
Because a pipe makes little diddly diddly sounds as opposed to boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. And descant is a comment, but a descant is also a singing line. On my deformity. So we have those D's, those angry D's, which are great. And then here's another shift. And therefore, since I cannot prove a lover to entertain these fair, well-spoken days, I am determined to prove a villain and hate the idle pleasures of these days. So we have lover contrasted with villain two lines later. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. And we have days and days. So there's the equation. Here's this on this side, lovers, and my brother, who's fucking all the ladies, and here's me on the other side.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we have some wonderful acting and theater references here, which Shakespeare often uses, and Richard's reminding you that he's an actor and this is a theater, and we're going to play it out for you here. Plots have I laid, inductions dangerous, So plots and inductions are like the opening scenes, the introduction. By drunken prophecies, libels, and dreams, to set my brother Clarence and the king in deadly hate the one against the other. And if King Edward be as true and just as I am subtle, false, and treacherous, this day should Clarence closely be mewed up about a prophecy which says that G of Edward's heirs the murderer shall be.
That's a lot of, a little King Lear in there. We got a little King Lear in there.
Yeah.
The Edmund and Edgar and Gloucester.
Yeah.
Triad there.
Right. Have a little confusion going on and people pitting people against each other. So I love this prophecies. It's going to come back later in the scene as well. So it's allusion to witchcraft. I'm going to use a little trickery. I'm going to use a little whatever I got. Libels, slander. I'm going to slander people. And then we have the word dream. It's a heads up. Big changes are going to happen here. And dreams are going to figure a lot in the play. Clarence has a huge dream that he tells you about when he's sleeping in the prison. Stanley has a dream about Richard, actually, later, that he tells Hastings, and Hastings disregards it to his detriment. Yeah. So he's going to use these people as pawns, right? Clarence, the king. I can make this work. But I love the word if, because it's a big, small word. If everything goes according to the plan. Like, I am not entirely in control of these humans. So hopefully all will go well. And then we have the total antithesis of him and Edward. If King Edward is as true and just as I am subtle, false, and treacherous, then Edward has to make the determination to send Clarence to prison because he's going to be afraid for his children. So Richard has circulated this rumor that someone whose name begins with G is going to murder Edward's children.
And Clarence is George.
George, yeah. But Richard is Gloucester.
Of course.
So he has this wonderful way of sort of telling the truth and letting people make their own assumptions,
yeah,
which gets them into trouble. But then he sees somebody coming and he goes, "Dive, thoughts down to my soul. Here Clarence comes. Brother, good day. What means this armed guard that waits upon your grace?
His Majesty, tendering my person's safety, hath appointed this conduct to convey me to the tower."
Line ending. What's the tower?
That's the Tower of London. It's where you go to be locked up.
Locked up and beheaded and killed. If
sometimes,
you're a traitor. Yeah.
Sometimes you just live there like... she was French. It's a name. It's the A that's a part of France. Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Ah,
she lived in the tower.
Yes, and
because Henry, her husband, locked her up for inciting war against him, but he never beheaded her. He just left her locked in there and brought her out, you know, for holidays.
Yes. So actually, the tower did have like royal apartments and beautiful rooms in them. So when people like the Duke of Clarence go to the tower, it's, you know, it's not going to be so horrible like it is for the poor people and the hard criminals, right?
Right.
It's not going to be crust of bread and glass of water that someone might have pissed in.
Right.
Yeah. They're going to have good meals and they're going to have wine and they're going to have, you know, whatever they need for living, but they're just not going to be allowed to leave. I like tendering my person's safety. So he's like caring about me, but also handing me over. Tender, legal tender.
Like you too. Like, yeah. Money.
Yeah. Yeah. Money. Yeah. So the tower is line ending. And notice we're going to see that happen a bunch of times coming up. And Gloucester / Richard. Upon what cause?
Because my name is George.
Alack, my lord, that fault is none of yours. He should for that commit your godfathers. Oh, belike his majesty hath some intent that you shall be new christened in the tower.
Yeah, right.
So he should imprison your godfathers, who are the ones who named you. Belike is just maybe. and new christened, maybe he'll give you a new name in the tower.
Because he doesn't like the name George.
But, and so now he shifts to, oh no, has he been, he's been calling him Clarence all along, and you'll notice that Clarence calls Richard Richard. But Richard doesn't call Clarence George.
But
what's the matter, Clarence? May I know?
Yea, Richard, when I know, for I protest as yet I do not, but as I can learn, he hearkens after prophecies and dreams, and from the cross row plucks the letter G. And says a wizard told him that by G his issue disinherited should be. And for my name of George begins with G, it follows in his thoughts that I am he. That's a nice that. Rhyming couplet.
Yeah. Doubles, right? We have G, B, G, he.
It's right, Dr. Seussian.
Yes. So we have the word prophecies a second time. He hearkens. He's paying attention. He's only paying attention to, like, wizards and crazy, you know, prophecies and strange things. He's not actually listening to me. We have the word dreams for the second time. And then the crossrow is just the alphabet. But apparently in a child's primer, when they were learning the alphabet, the cross was stamped in first. So it's called the crossrow.
I said crossrow as if a fight.
That's okay. So the wizard told him that his issue disinherited. Disinherited. Yeah, we've got snaky sounds. It sounds sinister. And that means that whoever starts with G is going to make it so that his children don't inherit the throne. Whatever that means to you. All right. Want to finish it?
These, as I learn, and such like toys as these, have moved his highness to commit me now.
Yeah, toys are fancies. Why, this it is when men are ruled by women. 'Tis not the king that sends you to the tower. My Lady Grey, his wife, Clarence, 'tis she that tempers him to this extremity. Okay, so here we're bringing it in, right? Blame the women. We have the tower for the third time, and he's delineating the true enemy, all right? None of them liked her. My Lady Grey is the pre-married name of Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Was it not she and that good man of worship, Anthony Woodville, her brother there, that made him send Lord Hastings to the tower, from whence this present day he is delivered? We are not safe, Clarence. We are not safe.
That's the fourth mention of tower.
Yeah, the fourth mention of the tower. And so,
but that tempers him to this extremity.
I love that. Tempers is like molds him, but that's what you do to a sword.
Yeah, right.
So she is making him make these deadly choices, he's implying. Clarence is not going to survive this, he's implying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that good man of worship, that holy pious fellow, Anthony Woodville is her brother. He just said that. And mm-hmm. So Richard is here demoting both of them by calling them Lady Grey and Anthony Woodville, because they actually have titles, Queen Elizabeth and Lord Rivers. So he's mocking them, and he's talking about that whole, he's kind of mentioning that whole thing of them getting uppity and having titles. And he's saying that he did this to Hastings too, that Woodville did this to Hastings.
And that Hastings is about to be set free.
Hastings is coming out. Clarence is going in.
Right. Clarence. By heaven, I think there's no man is secure but the queen's kindred and night-walking heralds that trudge betwixt the king and mistress shore. Heard ye not what an humble suppliant Lord Hastings was to her for his delivery?
Oh, so now he's bringing in another woman. Mistress Shore. This was Jane Shore, and she was a married woman who was the mistress of the king and also of Hastings. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Hastings was dipping his wick in the king's mistress. Yeah. That's not cool. Not cool.
That's
very risky. So he's saying there's nobody that's safe except for the kindred of the queen and also the secret messengers, the night walking heralds that tippy-toe between the king and Mistress Shore. And he's like talking about Hastings as being a suppliant, a beggar that is asking Mistress Shore to help him get out of prison, using her sexual power over the king to help him get out of prison. Oh, it's getting very complicated now. Humbly complaining to her deity, got my Lord Chamberlain his liberty. Nice rhyme there. Mrs. Shore, he's making her a goddess, right? Because she has the power to give back life. She procured his release. I'll tell you what, I think it is our way, if we will keep in favor with the king, to be her men and wear her livery. Meaning Mistress Shore, we should get in good with her, wear the uniform of her house. That's her livery. But he means, let's go have sex with her. Maybe that'll keep us all safe. And then listen to this way he describes the queen. The jealous, o'erworn widow and herself, since that our brother dubbed them gentlewomen, are mighty gossips in this monarchy.
Wow.
The o'erworn widow. She's worn out. She's been fucked too much. She's had too many children. She was a widow when Edward married her. Wow. He's just really making her into nothing. And the word dubbed is like what you do when you make knights, right? So Edward, yeah.
The
so
knight,
Edward
right?
dubbed these women into gentlewomen. And now we have all the problem, all the blowback from that, right? Gossips, they are powerful busybodies in this monarchy. And we've got to figure out how to get around them. And then we hear Brackenberry pipe up. Yeah. He is the guard that's walking Clarence to jail, and he's getting a little uncomfortable with his conversation.
I beseech your graces both to pardon me. His Majesty has straitly given in charge that no man shall have private conference of what degree soever with his brother.
Yeah, he's like, you need to stop. Right, straightly.
You're not supposed to be talking to him.
Don't talk to him. And then Richard. Even so, and please your worship, Brackenberry, you may partake of anything we say. We speak no treason, man. We say the king is wise and virtuous, and his noble queen well struck in years, fair and not jealous. We say that Shore's wife hath a pretty foot, a cherry lip, a bonny eye, a passing pleasing tongue, and that the queen's kindred are made gentlefolks. How say you, sir? Can you deny all this? Oh boy. So we're like, we're not saying anything bad. We're just saying the king is wise and virtuous, and the queen is getting a little old. Right? Well struck in years. I mean, she's
well,
an age.
She looks good for her age. She looks right. good for her age.
Yes. And then he's picking apart the qualities of Mistress Shore. It's kind of a parody of what lovers did in poems and sonnets then, right? My mistress' eyes are nothing like the sun. So he's like, oh, cherry lip, bonny eye. Love sonnet to Mistress Shore.
And a passing pleasing tongue.
Yes, her tongue is really talented. She gives a good blowjob, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then Brackenberry. Yikes.
Brackenberry. With this, my lord, myself have naught to do. I got nothing to do with this motherfucker.
Yeah. Naught to do with Mistress Shore? I tell thee, fellow, he that doth naught with her, excepting one, were best he do it secretly, alone. So he's
naught.
Taking naught and
it's
turning
naughty.
It into naughty. Yes. Yeah. He. Anyone who does naught with her, that means fucks her, yeah, should do it secretly and quietly. And Brackenberry's like,
Brackenberry. What one, my lord?
Her husband, knave. Wouldst thou betray me? Like, anybody but one, right, should fuck her secretly. Mm-hmm. Brackenberry's like, which one? He's like, her husband. You jerk. You think I meant something else?
And Brackenberry, I beseech your grace to pardon me, and withal forbear your conference with the noble duke.
Forbear, desist, just stop.
Yeah, stop. And Clarence, we know thy charge, Brackenberry, and we'll obey.
We are the queen's abjects and must obey. Little nice play on the word subjects, right? We are abjects. We have to bow and scrape to her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brother, farewell. I will unto the king, and whatsoever you will employ me in, were it to call King Edward's widow sister, I will perform it to enfranchise you. Meantime, this deep disgrace in brotherhood touches me deeper than you can imagine. So even if I have to make nicey nice with my sister
and call her sister,
yeah, I will do it to enfranchise, to liberate you. But then he has another one of those like speaking the truth things that is a bit of a pun, right? Touches me deeper than you can imagine, this disgrace. It means it concerns me more, but it's also touches him because he is doing it. Mm-hmm. He made it happen.
Right. And Clarence, I know it pleaseth. That's hard to say. I know it pleaseth neither of us well.
Well, your imprisonment shall not be long. I will deliver you or else lie for you. Meantime, have patience.
I must perforce. Farewell.
Great. So lie for you means both lie and also swap places. Like, I'll go be in prison for you instead. And mm-hmm. the word perforce, Clarence used because he's being forced out of the room. So off they go, and Richard. Go, tread the path that thou shalt ne'er return. Simple, plain Clarence, I do love thee so that I will shortly send thy soul to heaven, if heaven will take the present at our hands. But who comes here? The new delivered Hastings.
And Hastings, good time of day unto my gracious lord.
As much unto my good lord Chamberlain. Well, are you welcome to the open air? How hath your lordship brooked imprisonment? So we've had this word welcome before, right? You have arrived so nicely into the open air. Brooked is just endured. How was prison?
Hastings. Oh, with patience, noble lord, as prisoners must. But I shall live, my lord, to give them thanks that were the cause of my imprisonment.
Yeah, so notice how Hastings addresses Richard with all honor. My noble lord, right? Yep. And he uses the word you, very much giving him his status. Hastings was a really good friend of the Yorks, actually. He fought on their side all the time. He never changed sides. So it's very, and in fact, historically, they say that this wasn't true, that Hastings was not put in jail. But I guess for the sake of the play, they're showing that Edward is not so good to his friends.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I'm going to figure out who did this, and I'm going to give them hell. No doubt. And so shall Clarence do, for they that were your enemies are his, and have prevailed as much on him as you. He's implying the Woodvilles, right? Those people that put you in here also put Hastings in. I mean, put Clarence in here.
Yep. And Hastings, more pity that the eagle should be mewed while kites and buzzards prey at liberty.
Yeah, and this is also going to be a theme. They're going to bring in the hierarchy of birds, right? Where does the eagle sit in that ladder?
At the top.
And the kites.
Buzzards are scavengers.
Yeah. So they're sitting at the bottom, literally on the ground, eating whatever the other birds have killed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's also unwittingly pointing out what Richard's doing. Richard is a bird of prey, right? Richard is a scavenger. He's going to clean up what anyone else has left for him.
Yeah.
What news abroad?
No news so bad abroad as this at home. The king is sickly, weak, and melancholy, and his physicians fear him mightily.
Yeah, they are afraid for him.
Yeah.
And melancholy, he's suffering from depression.
Yeah.
Now, Richard is going to swear by St. Paul, and you'll notice that he does this a lot. He uses St. Paul quite a bit, but he uses other saints as well. Whenever a character swears by a particular saint, you should ask why. Because the saints were all saint of this or that or blah, blah, blah. They were specific. Mm-hmm. So for Richard, St. Paul was also Saul, right? And he was converted on the road to Damascus from being a Jew into being a Christian. So
maybe he's a flip-flopper.
He's a flip-flopper, right? So maybe for Richard, you know, he was also the one to kill the first Christian martyr. So, you know, Richard is going to be the one to kill the martyrs in this family. That's significant. He was a flip-flopper, and Richard is also, you know, presenting right now as a supporter of Edward, and later he's going to be defaming Edward and destroying his line. So he's going to be a flip-flopper too. So by St. Paul is very significant. Now by St. Paul, this news is bad indeed. Oh, he hath kept an evil diet long, and overmuch consumed his royal person. 'Tis very grievous to be thought upon. What, is he in his bed?
He is.
Go you before, and I will follow you. And Hastings goes out.
Overmuch consumed his royal person.
Yeah.
I have overmuch consumed my unroyal person.
Yes. So he's eaten too much. He's drank too much. He's consumed too much. Too many women. And this is what his sin is, gluttony. So Hastings goes out. And then Richard is talking about Edward here. He cannot live, I hope, and must not die till George be packed with post horse up to heaven. I'll in to urge his hatred more to Clarence, with lies well steeled with weighty arguments. And if I fail not in my deep intent, Clarence hath not another day to live. Which done, God take King Edward to his mercy, and leave the world for me to bustle in. So he's like, I'm sure Edward won't live long, but he can't die until Clarence is dead first, because that won't work out.
Right.
Otherwise, someone will go back into the prison and say, Clarence needs to come out because he has to be the king now. Fuck that. Nope, that's not going to happen. So I'm going to go in and make sure, you know, I'm going to speed him along with some more hatred, with some well-steeled arguments, which are well-armed. And then on to me, bustle in. I'm going to busy myself. But I like the word bustle because it's also a female item. It's part of a skirt. So that's an interesting thing for him to put on himself. Shit, I'm running out of battery. Why is that? Fuck. Okay.
You know, I don't know, but we're almost done.
For then I'll marry Warwick's youngest daughter. What? Though I killed her husband and her father, the readiest way to make the wench amends is to become her husband and her father. I don't understand that. What the fuck? The witch. Become her husband, yes, but not her father. That's weird. The which will I, not all so much for love, as for another secret, close intent, by marrying her, which I must reach unto. So he wants her money also. Warwick was very, very rich, and she is one of the heirs. And the wench, he's using this term of debasement. He doesn't really much think of her. He's generally pretty misogynistic, which is not a good thing. But yet, I run before my horse to market. Clarence still breathes. Edward still lives and reigns. When they are gone, then must I count my gains. Nice rhyming couplet.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really famous phrase. I run before my horse. Putting the cart before the horse. That came from this play. Yeah.
Yep.
So he's like, oh, so many things to do. Gotta go. Gotta go. Bustle.
Bustle off.
Bustle and bustle. Yes. So there he is. Our wonderful Richard. Wonderful and horrible and wonderful.
He's so fun.
Aaron has said many times, villain, not villain. So this is the whole play is sort of an example of that. It would be much too easy to sort of box him up and call him the villain. But
a lot of people do, just like they do with Lady M.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not true.
So much more than that. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Kicking it off.
All right.
With the Richard.
Whoop.
Okay. Thanks so much, you guys, and looking forward to sharing this new play with you. I'm Diana.
I'm Erin.
And this has been Fuck the Shakespeare. Ciao. Ta.
Ta-ta.
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.